Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Fully Equipped Podcast. I am Brian Dill.
And I am Keaton Pierce.
And we are so glad that you have taken the time to join us today. As we get started with today's episode, we are going to share some random, completely random pieces of information, fun facts, fun knowledge that will probably not help you in the slightest.
In no way. We will guarantee that it won't be beneficial, but you might find it enjoyable. Brian, right. I'll start with this because I read this the other day and it terrified me. I had to take like 2 minutes just to think about what this meant. I read the other day to give us a perspective of the Jurassic era when dinosaurs were around. Because they have found fossilized dragonflies that are very similar in genus to what we have now.
Sure.
The dragonfly that existed in the Jurassic era had wings that were 2 feet long.
Okay. Have you seen the movie Dune?
I have not, actually, which is probably surprising because I should watch it or read it.
But that's where my mind goes, because their vehicles that they fly in are basically giant dragonflies.
Well, that's the article I read, was that to give a proper... Because, again, what the article was saying was that dragonflies haven't grown in proportion to the environment that they're in. So the dragonflies that we have today are proportionately the same size that they were back then. Everything back then was just so much bigger.
Larger, okay.
They were like the 2 foot long winged dragonflies were in proportion. Everything else was that much bigger.
So if we
can visualize all the animals and birds and fish, and we see what size a dragonfly is today in comparison to us, we realize how much bigger things were that far back. 2 feet long.
Yeah. Ooh, you know what else that reminds me of?
That's wild.
You see the movie The Mist, the Stephen King movie?
Yes.
It reminds me of the bugs that are in that.
Yes, exactly.
Terrifying.
That's terrifying. So there you go. Another thing I saw the other day, because I almost start every day, I'll pull up Yahoo News, which may date me a minute because I don't know that Yahoo's relevant anymore, but it used to be relevant, and I still check their homepage. Anyway, I saw a thing that they were talking about the first item that was ever sold on eBay back in like 96 or 97.
Sure.
Do you know what it is?
Oh, man.
The first item ever sold.
It's one of those stupid things where it's got like somebody's face on it.
It is not a face, but it is stupid.
Somebody spit.
That would be great also, but no, it was a broken laser pointer.
What?
Somebody sold a broken, not a significant laser pointer, just a broken run-of-the-mill laser pointer, and somebody bought it.
That was selling it for parts or whatever.
I don't even know back then if they even thought of it as parts. I think somebody just saw that laying around and thought, hey, this new internet garage sale thing, I'm going to put this broken laser pointer. And somebody said, here, take my $10.
Okay.
And so be it. So that was the first recorded sale on eBay.
All right.
So there you go.
What do you know?
Dragonflies and broken laser pointers.
All right. So my fun facts are not any more helpful.
Good.
The first one is, do you know what allodoxophobia is?
No. No.
It is the fear of other people's opinions. I read that this is a very, very rare social anxiety.
Really? This is a real thing.
I was like, what? How could that be a fear?
I mean,
I don't understand what that's going
to
do to
you. I have an aversion to other people's opinions, not a fear of it, though. That's a whole nother, wow.
Right.
Okay, so this is real. You're not making this up.
Yeah, this is a real thing. Okay. You know, I didn't find any information on how many people are diagnosed with this.
Three.
Right.
In all of time.
Yeah, probably so.
Okay.
So secondly, did you know that the ancient Romans would put a piece of toast in their wine for their health? Now, how they put together that was healthy, I don't know. But that is where we get the phrase, raise a toast.
No. Okay, second question. How did they make toast? Did they have a toaster?
They set it on a rock and let the sun cook it. I don't know.
Brian, I'm going to go conspiracy theory here that the Roman Empire was actually built by aliens and they gave them toasting technology.
Well, right. Like the Egyptians and the pyramids.
Correct.
The Romans got a toaster.
Yeah. Here, Egyptians, we're going to give you levitation technology to build the Great Pyramid. Right. The Romans can have toast.
Can have browned bread.
That's right. Wow. Well, we've digressed.
But yes, yes. We
really hope that you've at least enjoyed this. Right. And anyway.
Well, there is a reason. There is a point to
there
this.
Is.
Since we're talking about knowledge today, there are pieces of information that can be particularly helpful to us
right.
in our spiritual development and in the way that we live our lives. And I wanted to start today talking about knowledge because in John chapter 13, there is a verse that I think is, I wouldn't call it an obscure verse because that's usually, you know, in Habakkuk somewhere
right.
or something like that.
Song of Solomon.
Right. But this is one of those verses that I think sometimes we skip over it
right.
on our way to the passage that we're
most familiar with. Yeah.
Because John 13, as you may remember, is the passage where Jesus washes the feet of the disciples.
Yes.
And there's so many lessons that can be learned from that passage and
right.
so many things for us to talk about. But there is a verse right before these actions are taken by Jesus that I think is really important in understanding what exactly is going on and how Jesus is able to do what he does. And it's verse 3 of that chapter. It says, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper.
Yeah.
So I think this speaks to what's happening there in the moment
right.
as he's about to wash the disciples' feet, but also all that's coming in that night and then the next day, because I hear a lot of people talk about, man, how did he do that?
Right.
How was he able to endure so much pain and suffering and rejection and all of the things that he had to do? And I think this verse tells us at least a part of the answer to that question.
Yeah.
Because Jesus knew who he was, where he was from, and where he was going.
Yeah.
That's the knowledge that Jesus had. And I wanted us to dig a little bit into
right.
that verse and what it tells us and how we can use that for ourselves as well.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about this before. Identity really matters to a Christian.
Yes.
I'm fearful that we probably don't think about that as often as we should.
Right.
Because it, you know, kind of like this verse, it can sometimes get sandwiched into other things, and we think about other topics more than we think about our identity. But our identity does matter, and I think to your point, you know, Christ was able to live and do ministry the way that he was because I do think he always kept at the forefront of his mind why he was here,
sure.
Who he belonged right. to, where he was going, what he was about. And when we think about that as Christians for us today, I think that should give us some encouragement. It should give us an ability to persevere when things get hard, because we recognize that we're not left. This is not the final place. This is not where we're gonna. This is not the end all be all.
Sure.
What we're doing on, as one of our elders at Gold Hill Road likes to say, on the time side of eternity, is having eternal influence on what's going to happen on the other side of eternity, where we
right.
ultimately get to be. That, you know, when Christ describes and we hear that we are, you know, a royal priesthood, that we are God's special possession, that we are treasured by God, I think that should influence the way we view a lot of things.
Absolutely.
I think that if we knew and really believed that, I think that would change the way we view forgiveness, the way we sometimes, I think we as Christians, maybe I'm just speaking personally, but we sometimes struggle with the idea of grace and mercy, that we sometimes in our minds, maybe not knowingly, but subconsciously, we kind of limit God and his grace and think, you know, God, I don't deserve that. God's not going to actually view me that way. But in reality, God is very anxious to view us that way through the lens of Christ, that if we are Christians, that we are a special possession. This is not just a throwaway relationship to God. This is very much the way that a parent wants to view the best from their children. They don't, you know, at least they should not want their children to be wrong. They shouldn't want to find trouble. They're wanting their kids to succeed and make the right choice, and will more often than not give them the benefit of the doubt. God very much wants to view the same thing of, you know, now that's not to say that when we mess up that he's just going to overlook it and that it's not a big deal. We still repent and there has to be a correction there.
Sure.
But that grace is there, that mercy is there, that forgiveness is there, the same way it is with a parent.
Right.
And that all stems from knowing who we belong to, who we are.
Yeah.
And I think to your point, you know, Christ knew where he was going. I think that should influence the way we live every day, is knowing that we aren't guaranteed tomorrow. You know, we aren't. And that should change the way we live today, because we recognize that we're not guaranteed that conversation we think we're going to have with somebody a week from now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially here in America, I mean, we so live in the future. You know, in fact, I was just talking with our associate minister on the way over here about, we have plans for the fall. We have plans for next year that we're talking about, like we know they're going to come.
Sure.
But in reality, none of us have that guaranteed.
Right.
And, you know, I think Christ lived in a very unique way because he knew my time here is limited.
And he had a very specific purpose.
Yeah. Right?
You know, I mean, he knew who he was, and he knew what he was supposed to be doing because of who he was.
Right.
Right. And I think that so many times we identify ourselves primarily by job, career, nationality, race, sports team that we identify with, you know, whatever.
Yes.
We have all of these ways of identifying ourselves rather than first acknowledging I'm a Christian, I'm a follower of Christ, and that needs to influence all
everything else,
the other decisions that I'm making. And if I can remember who I am first as a Christian, then hey, that changes my decision making process
on everything,
absolutely everything.
Well, so, you know, this is a little bit of a divergence from exactly what we're talking about, but I think it has merit. I was talking with somebody the other day that, you know, we've got an election coming up in November, and this summer and early fall, you know, that's going to dominate the landscape. And somebody basically asked the question, like, Keaton, it feels so contentious. It feels so
sure.
Sub in your negative adjective there.
Yes.
Why should Christians even care? Why should Christians even be involved in that kind of thing? And it kind of sparked this idea of, so back to your point, that knowing who we are, knowing what we're about and what our mission is should influence every other decision.
Sure.
And I had a conversation and I said, listen, you know, here's the thing. Sometimes that we as Christians get our priorities backwards and we get our identification backwards, and we allow nationality or job or political preference or sports team or anything else to be kind of the top lens that we allow everything else to trickle through and get influenced down line.
Right.
Whereas in reality, it should be the other way around. Our faith and our identity as a Christian should influence all the other, that, you know, politics and sports and career and relationships all are fine in their context, as long as we're viewing that through the lens of our faith first.
Yes.
And not the other way around.
Exactly.
We oftentimes allow our career to influence my priority at church.
Sure.
And we allow we might allow our political preference to influence spiritual
how
life, how we treat people and, you know, and things like that. And I think Christ had a unique way of living life because he had that perfectly in check.
Yes.
You know, seeing his life is really the only time we'll ever see that, where somebody has perfect balance between, you know, he lived a life of a normal man, but he also was perfectly balanced between knowing what he was here for, who he belonged to, what his mission was.
Right.
And you see a life that was so effective in spreading the gospel. Sure. And you might think, well, yeah, that was Christ. But I think more of that was because most of the things where we're inclined to say, oh, well, that was Jesus, so that doesn't matter. Well, a lot of his deity was suppressed while he was here. I mean, he is fully God, but the vast majority of that ability was never accessed. I mean, it was mostly him as a man. It was a perfect balance, yes, between man and deity. And only on very rare occasions did that deity really shine through. And most of that was when miracles were being done and things,
right,
like that. But
right,
most of his ministry life was just Jesus as a man that kept his life in perfect balance.
Yes.
And so I think we should be encouraged by that, to recognize that most of Jesus's ministry, you separate out all the miraculous stuff. You want to be effective as a Christian. You want to be effective as a minister, as somebody that spreads the gospel. You look at the life of Christ, and we can't perfectly get to that. But I think the thing that we should take from it mostly is you see someone who had perfect balance. And if we got closer to that, I think we'd be surprised how much more effective we would be.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think one of the things that I'm noticing is it's easy for us to talk about our identity in Christ.
Sure.
And that's who we are, right? That's a given. You know,
right.
We can talk for hours about that and why that matters so much, right? And we've probably talked before, even I think on this podcast before, about the impact of knowing where you're going,
sure,
and how that should affect the decisions you're making on,
yeah,
this side of eternity, and the kinds of things that become priorities based on what I know is happening.
Yep.
It even affects things like, you know, how we treat this life, you know,
yeah,
and what we hold on to as sacred in, yeah, this life, because, you know, death is not necessarily this horrible evil,
right,
as much as it is a transition for, yeah, us. But one of the things that I think is a little more challenging for us to talk about is the idea of where we come from.
Ooh,
you know,
yeah,
cause Jesus, it says here, Jesus, he knew who he was because God had given everything into his hands. He knew that he had come from God and was going back to God.
Sure.
And sometimes I think we need to think more carefully about where we come from.
Yeah.
Now, not in the same sense that as Jesus here, knowing that he was from God and going back to God,
sure,
that kind of thing. Yes, we are from God in the sense that we are a child of God.
Right.
You know, Psalm 139, verse 13, for you formed my inward parts, you knitted me together in my mother's womb. You know, those are passages that are helpful to us in understanding the importance,
right,
of who we are, how important we are to God. But I think also when it comes to thinking of where we come from, one of the things that is really helpful is acknowledging our past.
Yes.
Because
absolutely,
we sometimes want to kind of sweep that under the rug.
Yep.
And act like that's not really who I am.
Yeah.
Or something of that nature. And it may not be who you are today.
Yep.
And that's always a good thing to,
right,
to be improving, to do better and that, uh-huh, sort of thing, and allow, you know, your relationship with God and with Christ to change who you are today,
yeah,
compared to who you used to be. But let's not pretend like that didn't happen.
Right.
Whatever it is, you know, because those are such a significant part of who we have become. So instead of trying to pretend as though our past didn't happen,
yeah,
it's okay to embrace that and embrace the impact that has on who you are today.
Absolutely.
It changes so much about us, and it just, I think it provides us with a unique perspective,
oh yeah,
on how we got to where we are, and knowing, man, I am so blessed,
yeah,
to be where I am because look at where I came from.
Yes.
And how all of these things happened or didn't happen in my life or how I messed up.
Oh, yeah.
And got through it. And look at how God helped me get through that. You know, let's not forget where we come from.
Oh yeah. And I, you know, that's probably a topic unto itself. So often people come in my office and we talk about, you know, becoming a Christian and things. And I hear this at least once a month, if not more frequently, somebody that says, "Hey, I'm ashamed because of this past that I've had and this and that." But here's always my response. And this is not to say, because, you know, Brian and I had a similar upbringing in the sense that we grew up in a Christian home, right, and, you know, baptized when we were teenagers and that kind of traditional progression. And truth be told, I know a lot more people that had that than didn't. And so this is not to marginalize that group. But here's kind of the truth of it. And I'm curious, Brian, if this is your thoughts. We haven't talked about this ahead of time, but what I always encourage people that have that fear is that, listen, when the delta is larger between where you came from and where you are now, that story is all the more compelling.
Oh, absolutely.
And so some of the most zealous, effective evangelists, and I don't mean that in a traditional, localized preacher sense, but just people that are sharing their faith,
yes,
are almost exclusively, and this is just by happenstance, people that did not grow up in a Christian home,
right,
did not maybe came to faith much later in life. Because when that delta, when that space is bigger between where you came from and where you are now, you feel the larger that delta becomes, I think the more you feel a compulsion to tell people.
Yes.
Because you have a very personal, and this word gets thrown around a lot, but you have a testimony, you have a yes. story that says, look, this is not somebody else, this is not hearsay, this is not hypothetical. Look at my life, where it was, and look at where it is now.
Absolutely.
And you, talking to the other person, you tell me how that could be achieved by anything other than God. Those are those kind of stories. And, you know, we, to go a slightly different direction, but to emphasize the same point, at Gold Hill Road yesterday, we did a sermon on, we were in a series on the church, on we, the people of the church. And so the lesson was on the leadership of the church and talked about elders and deacons and ministers and things right. like that. But the point was, we were looking at 1 Timothy 3, talking about the qualifications for elders and deacons. Sure. And I read this earlier in the week that just really kind of blew me away a little bit, was in 1 Timothy 3, when it talks about the qualifications for elders and deacons, in the Greek, the word be is in the present infinitive form, meaning that what it means is when it says an elder needs to be these qualifications, it means that they need to be that today.
Yes.
Not that they had already accomplished that 30 years ago, not that what they did 30 years ago disqualifies that, but it almost is an inference that these men need to be qualified, they need to have the experience, they need to have the failures of their past to help influence their decision-making in the future.
Sure.
And that's why that present infinitive gets used to say, today, as they stand with their successes and failures that have led them to this point, they fulfill these qualifications, and the deacons are the same way.
Right.
So
right.
I think that kind of points us to this idea that, you know, the Paul, through the inspiration of the Spirit, is encouraging men that might take on that role to say, don't shy away from your past.
Right.
Because that be in the present infinitive is almost wrapping all of that past up and saying, utilize all of that to help make you be that man today.
Right.
And I think that there's a lot of parallel in our life as well, as, you know, we may never be elders or deacons. We may never care to do that type of work. But as Christians, that's still our story.
Yes.
We wake up every single day and that present infinitive be is, you know, Keaton is going to be this. Brian is going to be this. And the hope is that our past will influence whatever follows that be for today.
Exactly.
I'm going to be more forgiving today. I'm going to be more evangelistic today. I'm going to be fill in fruits of the Spirit, fill in all the characters of Christ, fill in all that stuff. And some of that, you know, when you talk about I'm going to be more forgiving today, sometimes it takes a pass where we didn't handle that right, or somebody didn't forgive us right,
sure,
to know how to do that better to somebody else.
Right.
Some of the greatest spiritual lessons I've learned in my life, I'm curious if you're the same, has been through some really tumultuous times where either I didn't handle it right or somebody didn't handle it right towards me.
Right. Right.
And sometimes the greatest teachers in our life are in the failures.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and I think that is, use that to our advantage. And that, I think that's our point here, is that past, where we come from, make that heavily influence the B that we are today.
Yes. Well, and I've used this story before. I've used it here at Indian Land. So apologies to those who have already right. heard this. But there's no sense in trying to sweep the past under the rug and pretend like it didn't happen.
Sure.
And if you remember, several years ago, I want to say maybe 2017, 2018, somewhere in that range, is when the first, since it's March Madness is concluding, the first 16 seed to beat a number one seed was the team that beat Virginia
yeah.
in the first round. I mean, Virginia wasn't just the number one seed in their bracket.
They were the number one seed overall.
In the country.
Yeah.
They were dominant. They'd only lost two or three games all year.
Right.
And they lose in the very first round.
Yeah.
And are the first team to ever do that as a number one seed. Mm-hmm. And it was just humiliating.
Right.
The next season, they won the national championship.
Yeah.
Because their coach told them, we need to own it.
Yeah.
Don't pretend like this didn't happen.
Yeah.
Acknowledge it
yeah.
and grow from it. Talk about it. Learning from where you right. came from.
Yeah.
You know, is so, so important. And now there are a lot of things that we are just not going to know
yeah.
in life.
Right.
There's a lot of unanswered questions. There's a lot of knowledge that you and I may not have that other people may have. Good for them.
Yeah, right.
But what we can know is who we are, where we're from, and where we're going.
Yeah.
And that is can have such an impact on the way that we live our daily lives.
Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes, to your point, as we kind of wrap up this morning, sometimes we as Christians get caught up in the things we don't know.
right.
Both in life and in, you know, Scripture. It's at least weekly. I get an email or a call. Somebody says, hey, what is this Scripture reference? And at least half the time I have to tell them because it's some obscure thing in Revelation or something where it's just like, we don't know.
Right, right.
But here's the beauty of it. When we recognize that everything that we need to know to get to heaven, we
yes.
do know.
Yes.
That includes where we've come from, where we're going, and who we are.
Right.
Those three things we do know, we can know for fact, and they can heavily influence where we spend eternity.
That's
and
right.
where we spend eternity and the people that are around us will spend eternity. So we want to encourage everyone that might be listening this morning to think about that, to think about who you are, where you've come from, and where you're going. And if there's any uncertainty on any of those three questions, we want to encourage you to find your local congregation, find elders, ministers that you
right.
trust, and find those answers.
Absolutely.
For many of us, where we've come from is not so much the problem, but who we are and where we're going can be a struggle sometimes to find the answer.
Yes.
One of the top Googled phrases of last year was something to that effect of, who am I? Identity is a question that is on the forefront of almost every generation's mind
yes.
right now.
Yes.
Especially the younger generation, as you know, there's so many more options, and sometimes options kind of dilute our purpose, at
yes.
least in our minds. We
For
feel
sure.
like I could do this or I could do this, and we struggle with what am I really supposed to be doing? So we want to challenge, encourage everybody to think through that. Where are you? Where have you come from? Who are you? And where are you going? And Brian and I's prayer is that when we understand those three things and embody and make our life a byproduct of that knowledge, that we will be more pleasing to God in that moment and in that life. And when we look back at the end of our lives, our prayer is that we will have been effective in the kingdom, and that as our good friend Andy Brewster says, the population of heaven will be greater because of the life that we've lived.
That's right.
We're thankful that you chose to join us today on the Fully Equipped Podcast. We're our prayer is that you have grown a little bit closer to God because of our time together, and we hope that you'll come back and join us on the next episode of Fully Equipped.